So is Ferrick like the worst BotCon toy ever, or just
no? I believe that would be either Landshark or Flak from 2009.
No, right. Flak is the worst. Yeah.
Yeah, which one was Flak?
Exactly.
Yeah. Flak is the Cybertron.
It could be Shatter's last blur with his new mold G1 blur head.
No, that's stupidest, not worst. Didn't they do the same thing for Dinobot in the pre-Beast Wars set?
No.
Oh, they actually did use the mold's existing suitable head?
They used the Armada head for that.
Like I said, they used the mold's existing suitable head?
Yeah.
This is how we get debates on where the power chamber is located.
The basement.
The belt.
The butt.
That's and near the belt. Yeah, it's probably Flak. Flak's probably the worst BotCon toy.
What made him the worst is he came at the exact same time as like the exact same figure on retail shelves.
Or possibly Deathsaurus from the 2005 set. The one that you can't really tell is different from Gigatron except that they put a new head on it.
But at least it was a new character.
Well, no, I mean it was an existing character. Flak is technically a new character.
Okay.
Maybe.
I don't mean that. I mean it's a character that we haven't received a better version of in Generations.
Oh. We didn't get a Flak in Generations, did we?
Yeah, in the Universe line. Like, the same year. That's why he was so terrible. They called him something different, but, you know, whatever.
I'm guessing they caught a lot of Flak for that.
Shut up.
This is Superhero Time with XV.
Don't hate the Transformers, hate the fans.
Hey, Mickey.
You know who else I hate? The Irish.
Paladin.
Bring it on, pony f***ers.
Ken.
I will end you.
And Fort Max.
We're getting up scales.
So this week on Superhero Time, we have 2 weeks of weeklies. And no power playback because f*** it. We'll do it next week. So, Paladin, what are the top three news items from the past 2 weeks?
Just three? Okay. There's two new arms change figures that we got to see in the 2 weeks we were off.
You know number that counts as two things, right?
Yeah, I figured. Number 10 is Gaim Jinba Arms, which is actually four forms in one release.
So it's like Gaim Climax form.
It's kind of a cluster, yeah.
It spins.
It morphins.
I think somebody determined that the Jinba arms could spin like that anyway beforehand.
From the way the costume's designed, yeah.
Yeah.
There were lots of unnecessary hinges and things.
Yeah.
Designed into it.
Yeah, so it's pretty obvious where that was going. Especially considering he was only using the lemon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he would be able to use peach, cherry, and melon at some point, too.
It's nice that they got that condensed to a single figure, but this is the first arms change figure I don't really feel the need to get right away.
Yeah.
I might get it eventually, but Jinba is still such an ugly-looking costume.
So, what can we call this? Like, juice box arms?
Fruit salad.
Yeah, good.
Isn't fruit salad the later form?
Yeah.
It's fine, because they will completely forget Jinba arms in a few episodes.
That's true.
Because
it can go sit sad and alone with Fang Joker.
Yes, because Kachidoki arms looks f***ing awesome.
That is Arms Change 11. And it looks like they did a great job of translating that design.
It's a little too bulky around the skirt for the figure, but kind of, I think, unavoidable, too.
Do we know what the missing number is yet?
That was
the Pokemon
missing number,
right?
Because number 12 is Duke, which we haven't seen in full yet.
Yeah, we always knew the missing number was 11, except Paladin had a hard time remembering his numbers that time.
Nope. Do we have any idea what 11 is yet?
We just said 11 is Kachidoki arms.
Okay.
I was trying to hold out hope for Knuckles somewhere in the line, but so far I'm not seeing that.
If anything, that's going to be some kind of exclusive thingy. I still think that's just going to end up being an arms set later for your exclusive Kurokage figure.
Kurokage's not an exclusive.
No, Gridon's the exclusive, isn't it?
No.
No.
I thought one of those was going to be...
No, Groudon and Kurokage both come with the vehicles.
Right, I thought one of them was going to be, like, web shop or something. I know Bravo is, yes, but...
Bravo, the other two Energy Riders, and Bujin Gaim are the only web shop exclusive arms chain so far.
I hope Knuckle comes out at least that way.
I kind of get the feeling we're not going to get Knuckle.
Actually, yeah. Knuckle is the perfect way. It's probably how they would do the mass release, the mass production Kurokage.
Yeah, because Silver Belt and maybe come with two arms changes.
Since arms change is so unbelievably popular, I can't imagine they wouldn't pass up an obvious opportunity for one more figure.
It's not like they have to do a lot of work to do it either.
Well, I think it's more of a question of using factory resources.
Yeah.
Would it be more profitable for them to make one more figure or to do more runs of previous figures? I mean, they might have a better profit turnout of running more plain old Gaim AC arms figures later on if it remains popular.
Not that, you know, you can always say Bandai moves with what makes sense.
Precisely.
Maybe they could do that as an exclusive.
Which
making
one?
Sense?
Yeah, webshop exclusive making sense. They only make as much sense as people pre-order.
Well, I'd say some of their exclusives make a lot of sense, given that they got that awesome commercial out of them.
I get the feeling that Bravo has become a lot more popular than they ever guessed he would be.
Obviously.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think Gaim itself is more popular than they ever thought it would be.
That too.
Yeah.
And I think Bravo kind of embodies that right now.
Gaim is more popular than everyone thought it would be, including the retailers.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Sentai. Meanwhile, the Sentai production team is over there committing suicide.
Though I will say, we do now know exactly who to blame when Bobby Link Japan accepts more pre-orders than they're able to fill.
Who?
The Bioman translator. He's working for him now.
Huh?
The one that disappeared last month?
Tom Constantine?
Or 2 months ago, something like that?
No, he didn't exactly... No, he didn't disappear.
Somebody disappeared, didn't they?
That was
my
Kira.
Interest.
The Hikari Sensei guy.
Oh, and that one still hasn't been heard from?
Actually, he came back a little while ago to say, yeah, I'm still alive, not dead. Then he disappeared, and apparently now he's dead in a bush again, so...
Uh-huh. So, Constantine's working for HLJ.
Yes.
Doing what?
I'm not sure.
Oh. Canceling pre-orders.
No, they don't cancel pre-orders. They just don't ever fill them.
No, he cancels the orders to fill them. Their pre-orders still stand. They just cancel, you know, ordering the product for them.
Oh. You should be more specific like that next time.
Your mom's specific.
She's Atlantic.
Her butt's Indian. That makes sense somehow, I'm sure.
I don't know, I long since stopped paying attention.
That's superhero time.
Intro quote.
So what's the last bit of news for us?
Well, because I want to hurt you, I will tell you that Saban has filed a trademark for the name Power Rangers Dino Supercharge.
It's better than Super Dino Charge, though.
At least Supercharge does make sense, but it means 2 years of dinosaurs, and god damn it.
Exactly.
Why couldn't we have had 2 years of GoBusters? That's right, because GoBusters didn't make any money.
Although, someone on Twitter a couple days ago had the best idea. Oh, it was, Soggy Hydrox.
That's not a very good idea.
Well, whatever. That's the person's no. Their idea was that they should use GoBusters the same way they used Alien Rangers. And that they bring back the aliens from Aquatar as the GoBusters, as Alien Rangers. And we could have David Yost be the Gold Ranger as a projection from Aquatar.
Oh, God.
No, that actually makes more sense. than Ahmed Baumit's idea for how to adapt GoBusters.
What did he say?
Oh, God almighty.
He managed to link it to both Lost Galaxy and RPM.
I can't even...
Does it use Power Rangers' new powers as well?
Does it probably would, yes.
Does it, like, say that RPM took place on Mirinoi or something instead of being on Earth?
Possibly. Let me...
Because that's something he would do. If someone let him.
The name for it is Power Rangers Cyber Core.
I thought it took at the other end of that subway tunnel.
Just skim through for a couple minutes and see what you think.
Do I have to spend a couple minutes on it?
No, but you could just listen to our reactions.
Yeah, Mirinoi, that's what I thought. An often forgotten fact in the Power Rangers universe is the human civilization is actually spread across two planets. It's not really forgotten so much as nobody cares anymore.
This is way too long. I'm not reading this shit. He put too much effort into it.
Well, that's kind of just what he does.
Yes.
Well, he's a writer. He's supposed to.
Well, it's more than that, though. It's not just that he's a writer. Before he was an official writer for Power Rangers, he was also a fan.
And therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
He also made the Beatbuster female, if that counts for anything.
Yeah, that would never happen.
Yes.
I still don't understand why they make female Rangers at all.
Sounds like they can sell them.
Yeah, they obviously don't like them. I mean, why bother?
Well, I mean, that's what comes from the source footage.
But why did they bother with the source footage?
Because it costs less than reshooting everything?
No, I mean, why does Japan bother putting female Rangers in?
I don't know. Japan's weird.
Because they didn't even make really toys of the Rangers, they just did the Zords. And the Morphers.
Yeah.
And the weapons.
Well, they have toys of the Rangers this year.
This year they do, but generally they don't f***ing bother.
But aren't
they used to all the time, though.
But yeah, aren't the Ranger toys this year limited to the male Rangers only?
Probably.
Like they don't have a female. They don't have a female Ranger body figure.
Not that I saw, no.
Yeah, so there you go.
They've Bandai'd themselves.
I wonder if the numbers in those figures can even change to 3 or 5. I wonder if it's just, 1, 2, and 4.
You count the Rangers 1, 2, and 4?
I don't think that's how math works.
Oh, okay. That's how it worked in GoBusters.
No, that was 4, 2, 3, 1.
That never got explained.
Was it supposed to?
It rhymes. There's your explanation.
Scramble.
How does 4, 2, 3, 1 rhyme with scramble?
It rhymes more in Japanese.
No, it doesn't.
It rhymes more in one other language.
What?
I don't know.
Well, that was the news.
Now, one more thing to get us off of this Dino Supercharge bullshit.
Did anyone else pre-order a Legacy Dragonzord yet?
No. Why? Did it get canceled?
That's a shame. It's available on Amazon.com now, and it qualifies for free shipping.
Because it's like $80.
It was $70 when the orders first opened.
Either way, that's well above the free shipping threshold now. So
of $35.
Yes, which they increased just in time for Christmas. Christmas shopping, anyway. I think they did it right after Thanksgiving. Amazon is kind of dicks.
When they have to be, yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a release date yet on Amazon, though.
It'll just be out whenever.
It'll be canceled.
I bet Titanus gets canceled.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Either it gets canceled or it ends up canceling the entire line.
Could be both.
On the other hand, if you need something to go with it,
it gets canceled and replaced with Space Titanus.
You could get this handy Legacy Megazord off Mandarake right now.
And this is only $250.
Before shipping and exchange rates. And
for once, eBay is the cheaper option.
That's because eBay's not in Japan. You have to put this into a little bit of context, you know.
Yeah, wasn't this an American exclusive item? Shouldn't it be more costly in Japan?
Yes. You know, it's only stupid people that would buy this toy from Mandarake just because it's on Mandarake.
And plus, why wouldn't you buy the 2010 well, Megazord
maybe if they were
instead
in Japan.
Anyway? I mean, the 2010 Megazord looks better.
Yeah.
It doesn't have random metal parts everywhere.
The Dragonzord is going to have random metal parts.
Yeah, I know.
Also, your mother had that metal slot installed.
That was just for coins, though.
Thanks for stepping all over the joke, Paladin.
I thought you were like a metal vagina because hers got wore out. She needs something more high test.
She's more machine than man now. And on that note, let's go to Tokyo Drift. Mickey, why don't you do episode 2? Because I don't think we got to talk about that.
Why don't I do episode 2?
I'm sure we'll find out.
We already know why you're not doing it, Paladin.
So is Paladin just banned from Tokyo overall?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, we can take it easy for a while.
That's what you think.
All right, where do we leave off?
You're as good as dead.
Yeah.
That's right.
Ticket.
That was like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Odin and Ticket are telling them that, oh, you're all doomed.
Doomed!
Maybe. Possibly. But we're not going to really tell you.
Yeah, so, Owner and Ticket are being internally vague and creepy. They're interrupted by Robot Slut offering treats.
Well, that... Yeah, after episode 3, that's not entirely inaccurate. Go on.
Yeah, it's less Slut, more, selfies than Ein.
We'll get to that.
Why does it have a mouth?
For blowjobs, doy.
I should not have asked that.
She even has handles on the back to do her in the butt.
I believe the term is, it's not going to suck itself.
Now, there's an answer.
Well done, Ken.
You're welcome. I've been kind of waiting for that.
Another intro quote?
No, too easy.
Ah.
We can't give them all of them.
Easy.
RoboSlut, whatever the hell her name is, it's forgettable.
Wagon,
which is not any better.
Yeah.
It's easy to remember because it's like Wagon that ass.
Yeah.
Well, let's just call her Robot Naomi.
Yeah, basically.
She is.
Except I don't think Naomi's as easy. Anyway, so she walks in with a tray full of, I don't know, chocolate frogs and other wizardy shit. And
this
the Tokyo's
isn't wizardy shit. Stuff actually happens here.
True. The Tokyos all say, oh, well, we're hungry, so we must be alive. Let's eat. And Owner and Ticker are like, God, these people are f-ing stupid. But Green sits off in a corner sulking because he's the broody emotional one.
With his balls in a cup.
Yeah, apparently he's got terrible taste in toys.
Well, what do you want? He's 5 years old.
So, after about 10 minutes of the theme song going go over and over again and being awesome, which I've really grown to love this theme song, actually.
Oh, and did you notice in the theme song, every episode, there's one bit that changes?
What is it?
Okay, when they're running forward and the explosion's behind them, in episode 1, it was Tokyo 1. Episode 2, it was 2.
That,
and episode
that
3,
falls
it
down.
Was 3. Yeah, the one that falls down, it changes every episode.
Interesting. I'll have to look for that.
And
so,
in an order.
After the opening, we cut to the Tokyos eating their grub. And Wagon talking about, oh, y'all look so young, except for you, Blue. You look really old and worn out. And so they start reminiscing about the days of old, and then they realize they can't reminisce shit about the days of old, including basic details of where the f*** do we live? What's happened since the tree? So, before they get too concerned about this, oh, we're entering the shadow line, y'all get out. what?
Conductor just kicks them to the curb as soon as they get off the train.
Wow, that wasn't even like a train pun either. Are you feeling all right?
I'd like to survive this night.
So they arrive at Dual Meadows, which sounds very normal and not threatening at all.
Except for the E in there.
It's not like the Japanese can spell English anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh, this place seems fine. And I was like, yes, not. See ya, bye.
So, no problem now, bitches.
So, you know, going into this, you thought this was going to be, you know, really just, you know, just kind of wacky, lighthearted Sentai.
And then they wander into the business park here, and the entire town, at the drop of a coin, proceeds to murder each other. And it's f***ing awesome.
And it's a big coin.
Yeah, I was like, what in the f***ing hell happened?
Must have gotten that thing out of Batman's cave.
Yeah, so episode 2, we get a town that halves its population every time the monster flips a coin.
Whoops!
I bet that's kind of driving down the real estate value.
No, no, they're not losing the population. They're just getting despaired.
So after the executions are performed, the town gets freaked out like, oh shit, you guys didn't duel. You're going to be in trouble. At which point, the monster notices them and summons the crows.
And of course, the monster asks the question, wait, which side is behind the white line?
An establishment that does make it just a flat circle around them.
So, fight for a while, and eventually they come across the first whiny kid of the series. Because I don't think the kids of the last was really qualified as whiny because they didn't have any personality, they didn't have to be talked to. But... yeah, this one, like his parents are dead and he's an orphan or some shit. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
You should also mention in the first fight where Tokyo 2 switches to green and he has to adjust the tracks on his helmet.
Yeah, that is pretty great that the tracks aren't attached for him.
Makes me want to see Sid actually, you know, move his helmet when he's adjusting for his hat that's not there anymore.
And of course, Ticket has to point out they're treating this swapping like it's some kind of toy gimmick.
Lampshade! Subtle!
So, after they meet this little kid, the monster of the week shows up and so he's, look, guys, okay, here's the rules. You gotta play by the rules of the episode. So he goes to explain to them that, you know, you have to duel. It's what you do. And they're like, okay, well, next time we'll duel you.
Do the duel.
Yes.
It's time to duel.
Duel.
I miss Dan Green.
Intro quote.
Those are all references I do not get at all.
Well, do the do.
Yeah, you're too old for that.
And you probably didn't pay enough attention to Yu-Gi-Oh! When it was fashionable to make fun of it.
It was never fashionable.
Best to ignore Yu-Gi-Oh!
It was never fashionable to like Yu-Gi-Oh! But it was always fashionable to make fun of it.
Yeah. At least the original series, I don't think, besides, you know, proclaiming card games on motorcycles, I don't think any of the later ones were really notable.
Yeah, it's still going on.
No one cares.
No, it's just, I don't get it.
Like Beyblade.
As long as it's profitable.
Why is Beyblade still around?
Beyblade at least has, you know, like years off and then randomly it'll come back. Yu-Gi-Oh! Has never stopped in 15 years.
Been around for 15 years?
I think so, actually.
Hmm.
Or close to it.
Yeah, that seems about right, actually.
Alright, so the Tokus take the kid underneath the bridge. Which sounds worse than it really is. Really, he just farts out this toxic evil gas for a while.
Which also sounds worse than it actually is.
Oh, no, wait, that sounds fine.
That's pretty much normal right now, but when you get a chance, pause the episode and try to read the writing on this kid's t-shirt.
What?
Maybe a hint as to the future of the Tokyugers.
What does it say?
It is the directory for a children's hospital.
That's odd.
Huh.
It could mean everything. It could mean nothing. I don't know.
That's a rather weird thing, just be an accident. Why would you have a shirt like that anyway?
Because Japan.
Even by Japan standards, I mean...
No, this is pretty tame for Japan standards.
I wonder how hard it would be for me to get a shirt printed up with, like, a page of a phone book on it. Like, could I just make high-resolution scan of a phone book page and upload it to T-Fury or something and, you know, end up with a shirt out of it?
No, it'd have to be Doctor Who-related first.
Angry transvestites?
Or pony-related, one or the other.
Meanwhile, back at the pimp-ass villains, pimp-ass darkness lair, because, goddamn, these costumes are so brilliant.
They are.
They're busy describing their plot to take over the world through trains, and apparently it's the same plot from Spiral Zone, where they just take over enough of the planet and their gas fills up the rest of the space.
Sounds logical enough for a supervillain plot.
It seems appropriately Japanese-y in concept.
Yes.
Appropriately Monster of the Week generating, anyway.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back at Dual Meadows, Green is apparently the only member of the Tokusers that can think. So, clearly, he's not like the Go-Wanders in any sense, in that he realizes there's something weird going on, we can't remember shit, we didn't realize we didn't remember shit.
Yeah, if this was Go-Wanders, like, if this was Go-Wanders, Green would be in a dress by now.
Yeah, seriously. And whining.
He sort of
he's whining still, yeah. But...
Different kind of whining.
So he's like, guys, we need to figure out what the hell is going on. They're like, nope, we're heroes. No time for that shit. And they started going on and on about this for quite a while, actually.
Yeah.
Here's
Before
the plot
you know
of...
it, it's time to duel again.
Here's the plot of our series. Basically. Also, Hikari's an asshole.
There's always one.
Well, it does make a good
Hopefully
contract.
There's one.
Well,
if you got more than one or less than one, there's problems.
Yes. Well, he does make a good contrast to the rest of the team, really.
Yes. And I appreciate that it's Green that's the reasonable one and not Blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice shift in the dynamic.
Yeah,
and it's a good balance
kind
overall.
It's going back to how it was before we started having the idiot Greens.
Yeah. Now we're back to idiot Blues.
Well, someone has to be an idiot, and it can't be Red.
Are you sure about that?
Well, not anymore. That went out of style in the 90s.
Yeah.
Go-Wanger?
Go-Wanger doesn't count because everybody was an idiot.
except the Wings.
Gekki Ranger?
Even
the Wings are kind of, yeah. they're just less idiots than the rest of the cast. Which makes them look like geniuses. That's accurate.
Alright, yeah. So, well, duel time, which basically means fight time, not really specifically dueling. they start kicking ass, and they realize, oh, well, we can't be ghosts, because we're obviously solid, because we're busting these people's faces open with swords.
I like that realization.
So, basically, Green comes to the realization of, like, okay, I guess I am solid. And Red begins to duel with Monster of the Week, who I never even bothered to learn his name.
Did it have a name?
Red does whip out this really awesome sword move where he, like, whips train tracks in a spiral at them. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the awesome part of the episode.
Yes!
Dueling trains.
Well, before this, didn't we have him shoot... didn't we have him... Red enter by shooting the giant coin?
Yes! So it never landed in the first place.
That's how you do an entrance.
Yeah.
That was kind of a marvelous entrance, really.
Yeah, it was. But my favorite part of the episode is where Red and the Monster of the Week duel on the backs of flying trains through the sky.
It's very Denliner.
It's very awesome.
No, it wasn't very Denliner. If it was Denliner, they'd just be standing on top of it in one place on... not moving around on it.
There'd be a lot more explosions, too.
There's a particularly fun bit where the trains circle up and they have to run the sides of them.
And they have to jump over the gap in between the ends of the trains?
Yeah. It was just a very fun, creative fight sequence.
And we'll very well coordinated, too.
And we'll never see another one like it.
Probably not.
Probably not, but I'm thankful we saw it this one.
We might in the last couple episodes.
I just love how it ended when they went under, you know, when he got his swords cut off, and then he's like, "That sucks to be you." He just cuts him down. Like, no, and it didn't even require any flashy, you know, stock footage finisher or anything like that. He just cut him down.
And then he fell off the train and blew up midair. Awesome.
But I guess auto growing is just a thing.
Which is fine. It doesn't really matter how they grow.
It doesn't, but they don't have to come up with any contrivances for them actually getting big. So that's also that can be an advantage.
Less time wasted. Mm-hmm. And it's time to form the Tokyo Rectangle. Which I have to admit is kind of growing on me, especially after episode 3. But we'll get to that later.
Yes, we will. But
growing,
yeah,
you
say? Part where they went through the tunnel and the monster got his sword snipped off.
Were you paying attention, Peldon? We just finished talking about that part.
I actually like this mecha fight. It is really short, but I like that they took the whole duel aspect and didn't you just, you know, I.
Yeah. The whole back to back.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, 5 paces or, you know, 5 city blocks.
Yeah.
But,
and of course, the monster cheats.
Yes, but of course, they just break the Megazord apart and reform it.
Because there's an emergency break apart button.
Handy.
Which we will probably also never see again.
I don't know. I could see that one happening.
Only if there's an emergency that requires breaking apart. So anyway.
So, Monster gets defeated. And, what the hell do they ask?
It's about, thinking that if the reason that they don't have their memories is because they're from a town that got taken over by
That's
the Shadow
right.
Line.
Yeah, and so the owner helpfully responds, you're right and you're wrong.
No, you're right. And then the puppet goes, you're wrong.
Because ticket.
I really thought he was going to get on my fucking nerves. And yet,
it's hard to hate him because he's such an asshole.
I know, that's the thing.
Oh, did you talk about the part during the fight where Wagon was trying to get the monster off the roof with a giant fork?
Oh, no, I did skip that, yeah.
That was very Naomi.
Yeah.
If they would have had giant forks on the Denliner. Why didn't
I'm sure
they have...
would have at some point.
Why didn't they have giant forks on the Denliner?
Didn't owner have giant utensils he used for
that
contest?
Because it's too easy to eat your rice that way.
He had, his giant spoons and ladles for his rice-eating competition, but nothing like that.
Well, surely they came as a set, though. Maybe she just didn't pull out the giant spoons and ladles, and he didn't pull out the giant fork.
Perhaps not.
But it's probably standard train equipment.
In Japan, yeah, probably. The Japanese are very, sophisticated about their trains. Serious business,
Yeah, that's why they all fly.
Yeah. Okay, so that was episode 2. Ken, want to do 3?
Yep. So, Morse, actually, they kind of pick up again right where they left off. With Conductor.
I kind of like that the episodes all stream together.
So far, I doubt it'll keep doing. If they does keep doing that, that would be nice. It might be. That might actually be a reflection of Gaim's popularity.
Keep stringing still... together with exactly how Ticket's being an asshole.
I do like how Hikari asks, sort of, could you be any vaguer? even the characters are aware of how much these two are bullshitting them. But it's like, well, we kind of have to do this, both for us and.
Because a lot of people will die if we don't.
But apparently their imaginations were so strong they just wound up on the Rainbow Line, although...
Right, maybe.
Maybe. Possibly. Anything you ever say with Conductor or Ticket, you have to just kind of append maybe in your head or else we'll be here all day.
Well, they specifically say maybe.
Yes, I know
because
that.
Because it's not like they saw it happen.
Yes, this is true.
Whenever conductor talks and gives exposition, he gives it like a dungeon master would in D&D. It looks like what has happened is you were ejected because your imaginations were so strong. That's what it seems like to you.
And then there's one part where he's questioning, and he turns to the camera and is speaking to the audience, but then the camera moves to the side of his head, and he's still speaking in that direction, but then he turns back around to them.
Yeah.
This dude is insane.
It's like Owner before he got mellow.
I've never seen that mellow. It always seemed pretty intense.
Compared to this...
He basically gives them an ultimatum. It's like, you can look for your hometown if you want to, but then you have to disembark and, you know, get the fuck out of here. Which means you can't be a Tokyuger and, you know, fight these guys, which are going to destroy the planet. So which do you want? While Wright...
I'm kind of basically given no choice. It's like, yeah, you can go off for selfish reasons, but you don't want to die.
Yes.
It's good that they're that upfront about it for a change.
Yeah, and then Wright's like, oh, he's very good with that puppet. And you can just tell, like, it's like there's almost this moment where it's like they want to just leave a pause there, but they didn't quite. For the audience to just stare at him. But Wright is fairly convinced that, nah, he's not going to get off. Well, Kagura is less convinced. Speaking of which, she meets Selfie. She has a little moment with Selfie Bot, who is, yeah.
Yeah, let's just go with that.
Yeah, and we'll just walk right by it like she did. Because she is angsting over, you know, finding her hometown. And, you know, maybe proving they're not f***ing dead.
Yeah, just the little things like that.
That doesn't seem very important.
No, amnesia, and, you know, I can't remember anything since I was 5 years old. But... Wright and her have a discussion where he's like, you know, if that's what you want to do, go do it. Don't feel obligated just because Pickett's an asshole. Not said, but implied. But they are approaching a place now called Peace Valley. Kagura wanders off.
Better to be surprised.
Just a moment.
Peace of what?
P-E-A-C-E.
Of what?
Anyway. But Kagura manages to wander off for just like 10 seconds, and then the rainbow line just takes off and leaves her.
Imagine the ticket saw her get off, was like, alright, we're ditching her, go.
Yep.
But, he was probably mad because Wright tried to pull him off.
What should arrive but a Shadow Line train with the creepiest monster introduction I've seen in quite a while.
And suddenly we are in Death Valley.
Yes.
California?
Should have stayed there for another 13 seconds there, Ticket. Although, yeah.
Actually, flashing back for a second, that was great when Wright tried to steal Ticket off his hand.
Yes.
And I wish that he had, and there's some disgusting, horrible monster or a bloody stump there.
Just collapses like the doll in Dr. Maki.
Yes.
You mean Conductor collapses, not Ticket.
Right.
Yes, either way.
Or you know, even just as bad. His hand is still fine under there, but Ticket keeps talking.
Yeah. That would be my expectation.
No, what would be funniest is that if he had you take it off, it's mutilated hand, but no, wait, he's just wearing that over his hand.
So anyway...
Or, another Ticket.
Kagura is right.
There's a human Ticket inside there.
Kagura is rightfully f***ing scared out of her damn mind. But, to her credit, she does confront the Shadow Monster. And transforms and does her introduction speech and the team name. And he's like,
wait, how can a Sentai be one person?
Which I think is exactly what Marvelous said back in Go Busters versus Go Kaiser to Daigo. But, you know, she starts, you know, trying to lay into him. But that does not end up turning out too well. She gets chained up.
As always, she's vulnerable to the chains as a Japanese girl.
Damn, man. This is why you don't get to do this summary.
I'm wrong.
Well, no, but regardless, she gets sucked into the coffin and locked away, so Chain Shadow just ends up dragging her off. But she leaves behind the rice ball that Wright left for her.
You mean donut.
Shut up.
Jelly donut.
Isn't it a sandwich?
Anyway, meanwhile, back at the villain's abode, there's some discussion about this and that. And nothing really too important that I can tell, just except for General Schwartz dropping his handkerchief, Greta picking it up, and he's like, I don't take anything back. I dropped on the ground. You can have it.
And she immediately shoves it into her vagina.
Probably.
Her dark robot vagina.
But I will just, again, go into how much I f***ing love the villain designs, especially Schwartz.
Can't really blame her for falling in love with that awesome suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And remember, this is that's the girl that's supposed to be the bride of the Emperor or something.
Yeah. That's going to turn out well.
Wonder what the Emperor looks like.
A badass, probably. At this rate.
Probably so one that comes giant from the start.
But they realize on this 5-car train that suddenly they can't find Kagura.
Well, that took them a while.
Yeah, it only took them overnight. Whoops.
There's five engines on there. It probably has a lot of rooms.
They do actually have changes of clothes. Wright goes to ask them to turn back, and Ticket's like, dude, this is a f***ing train, not a taxi. Again, actual dialogue. But they do turn around to go after her because conductor's like, well, we can't afford to lose a toe huger. No concern about her herself, mind you. They just can't afford to lose a toe huger.
Again, brutal honesty.
But it's like, the way he phrased that, it feels significant. It's like, yeah, we need a weapon. She's still a weapon. Let's go get her. Next stop, Death Valley, then, which is, of course, they noticed that that's not quite right. So, anyway, in Death Valley, all that's left is a few kids in elementary school with the creepy singing and the coffin guy. And, oh, Jesus Christ Almighty.
And suddenly Kagura has company.
That just makes me think, like, in Garo, that would have been a lot more disturbing than it already is. Because that just looks like a setup from Garo. It's like, oh, suddenly there's a horror behind
it. Didn't have enough stakes.
Or tits.
Yeah, Kagura probably would have been topless by then.
No.
The regulars were never topless. That was just the fill-ins.
Yeah. So anyway, the Tokyo Futures show up and confront the Crows and Chain Shadow. And quickly deduce that, yeah, she's probably in the damn coffin. So they transform, and it's fight time. While Kagura seems to be actually affected a bit by the kids in there. And hey, they actually put commercial breaks in different spots in this show, I'm now noticing.
Yeah.
There's two commercial breaks during the actual show itself, like with Kamen Rider.
That threw me off.
Yeah, they started doing it with episode 3 of both.
What?
Because the first two episodes only had the commercial break after the opening, before the preview ending and in the middle of the show, right?
I only noticed it in this episode, so... But, you know,
but yeah, with Dawn started having a...
Because Ryder doesn't have an ending theme, it always has a second commercial break during the action.
Well, Gaim started having a second commercial break. Well, Gaim still... Ryder still always would have the commercial break before the next episode preview.
Well, yeah, it would have that, but...
Sometimes they had them in the basement.
Yes, anyway...
Gaim started having an extra commercial break in episode 3.
For the love of so.
Anyway, moving on. I'm sorry, I started us down this path.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Internally
talking. I deeply regret this train
everything.
Of thought.
Damn it!
Okay, so anyhow, Wright manages to slip inside the coffin.
Metaphor.
What? He does. And is about to cut Kagura free, but she's not. Like, you know, wait. Hold it, I got this. So she breaks the chains herself and then punches the cross that's holding them in there, which breaks them all free of the coffin. and then transforms and starts to beat the fucking shit out of Chain Shadow.
This is a much better attitude for a Pink Ranger.
So also, it is notable. We are on episode 3, and we have a Pink Ranger focus.
That Let's go and get this Pink Ranger focus out of the way early.
Except next week is a focus on like green and yellow, so that's actually kind of surprising.
Green and yellow, not just, you know, yellow.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's still interesting. Or is it blue?
To be fair, I like dual focus episodes better than single anyway, so
yeah.
I'm okay.
Normally, but I do like the focus on Kagura in this episode. But as she's beating the shit out of Chain Shadow, Wright recites a memory of when they were children, and she imagined herself that so much to be a mermaid that she almost drowned, and then almost drowned Wright.
When he tried to save her.
Yes, because when she gets into her imagination, she really, really gets into her imagination, and that's what is basically powering her, and powers her ability to beat the ever-loving shit out of people. Which seems significant, given that the entire power of them is, well, imagination. So you're already setting up one of the most powerful ones to be the girl.
Completely.
What the hell is
this? She's the most powerful, but also her power comes at a drawback of that she doesn't really know how to use it very well.
Well, it comes at a drawback of she's completely crazy.
Yeah,
I think they're all a little bit completely crazy at this point.
But still, it does.
Yeah,
it
but
does...
she's like berserker. I mean,
which Wright notices is like she's gonna get herself killed. Also, so let's step in. So everybody steps in, and then they wind up in the pool, and they get and Wright and Kagura get.
Is it the pool from Forza?
No, it's an outdoor pool.
they remember that their hometown was by an ocean. So
they're in Japan. What hometown is this?
Inland cities.
Our hometown used to have a sky.
There are inland towns now.
We had roads in our city.
But anyway, so
where we're going, we don't need roads.
They go back to finish Chain Shadow off, and Kagura and Wright switch colors again. And again, it does strike me as kind of significant that Wright puts on the pink colors, and then they don't draw attention to it. They just go like normal.
Ignore it. Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't even ignore it. It's just like, okay, here's another power we can kick ass with. Let's go. Which I don't think would have happened, 10 years ago or so, probably.
Probably not even 5.
No. Probably not with somebody, and probably not with a writer like, say, Riku Sanjo, as opposed to Kobayashi.
And then they get to use the imagination bullet again.
Yes! Which is pliers this time. Because.
I think it's supposed to be wire cutters,
yeah.
But well, even that doesn't make too much sense, because it should be bolt cutters to get through the chains.
Yeah, so it actually looks like, actually, those are pliers. No, those are pliers.
I like that we've got a return to the insane Go Ranger Hurricane type finisher, but there's context to have it make sense.
Yeah. Nope. Like, okay, he had chains, so you cut the chains.
I'm going to say, yeah, there usually was some sort of context with the Go Ranger Hurricane and Big Bomber.
Mm-hmm. Well, but here, it's imagination, so clearly whatever you imagine to solve your problem. I mean,
there's a reason for there to be ridiculous stuff shooting out of their gun.
Right.
Well, there was then, too.
So, anyway, Express Coupling and Tokiwo fights until he gets chained up and locked inside a coffin. Lights, stuff starts blaring around, and he's Wright's like, no, I know we can break out of this. I'm imagining it right now. Which, damn, Wright, hormones must have hit you fast, dude. I realize you just, like, took a dive with a girl in the pool or something, but come on. Seriously.
I think Magenta had the best reaction to this.
Like, do we even have to say what it is? Or do we... Anybody watching should hopefully know what this is.
Victory through train boners.
Yeah. So what was the reaction for Max?
That if they had known that they were that the very next week would be Train Boner, they wouldn't have bothered trying to rewrite that one line about coming in through the rear.
Oh, yes, yes. Really, I wish those had come in the same week. Just because that would have been perfect.
Train yeah. Penis is just basically the best thing I've ever seen a Megazord do.
And I've seen a comment, and it's like, that's not an accident. How many people, how much planning, how many executives and producers and the writer and director
and even the guy in the suit, what did he have to be thinking when that went on?
And toy producers had to agree to
yeah,
this.
Cause
this
you
was
know
a good
those
idea.
Toys are play tested with kids. You know, every single kid did that and said, look, penis.
And they're like, no.
Well, the toy itself can't actually do that very well.
Aww.
Define very well.
It needs something to hold it up.
I mean,
well, like, say a hand.
Yeah, that happens to everyone.
Yeah.
It's completely natural. Oh my god.
That's what Figaro stands for.
Actually, it being floppy would be even worse.
It's like Giga Beetle designed this Megazord fight.
Oh.
We should have had Giga Beetle come on to talk about this episode.
Anyhow, next episode, do you remember in the first episode where we were saying, I wonder how long it is until somebody just loses their pass? Well, here we go.
Episode 4.
Yep, episode 4, someone gets Tommied.
At least they're getting it out of the way soon. It's like Kobayashi was reading our minds, which I think actually explains a lot of the end of Go Busters as well. So I'm a little scared at the moment. And she's writing Zero, so I'm happy, so hopefully that turns out well. Or has written Zero, since apparently it's all aired now.
How come wasn't translated on the fly? Like,
Because it, well, for one, it all aired in the same week.
Yeah, it aired in like a course of like 3 days.
It aired last
Wasn't
week.
It on some premium channel, too?
Yeah, I think it aired Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So it was 2 episodes a night.
So there was no way to do it sequentially. I mean, you just had to wait and do it all at once, basically. I mean, somebody
it's a little
probably
disappointing, but at least we get to watch it now.
Well, all you had to do is wait, you know, a week for the first 2 episodes. Less, really. Not that bad. You know, think back to the days of when there was nothing but TV Nihon and everything was a week late. If you were
if
lucky.
If you were lucky.
Yeah. Okay, so since we're not doing power playback, why don't we take a break now before we get into Gaim? Because that's probably going to take a little while.
Superhero time.
Off the tracks.
Ruining jokes for everyone.
Ay, 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 ay! Master Bio has turned back time with disastrous results. Zordon, help!
Summon the help of the Mighty Morphin Alien Rangers from a faraway galaxy. Alien Rangers, the future of Earth depends upon your interplanetary powers. We need your help.
Don't look now, Master Bio, but the Alien Rangers have summoned their mighty battle forms. And the evil plan you hatched is about to be foiled. You'll wish you've never been hatched.
Alien Rangers and Battle Boards from Bandai.
I like that we're once again living in a Toku Golden Age where both shows are good at the same time.
Well, one of them's good anyway.
Man, this is like Mickey a couple years ago.
Yeah, like, when he had his Paladin year with Forze.
When we're watching Gokaiger and Forze, it was like, huh.
Yeah, like I said, every one of us gets to go through one of those.
I guess I will eventually.
Fortnax probably never will because he doesn't participate anyway.
Except when you make him.
Yeah, well, I usually don't do that because I don't want to suffer through it either. No offense, Fort Max.
None taken.
None paid attention to.
That's the great thing about Fort Max. We don't really have to worry about hurting his feelings because he doesn't have any. As he sits there with his microphone muted and coding something, probably. What are you doing right now, Fort Max?
Well, I have Mospita Disc 1 encoding.
You can always count on Fort Max to be encoding something. Fort Max, how did you even get involved in all this video encoding stuff?
I wanted better raws for Gavin.
So you taught yourself how to encode video from Blu-ray or DVD disc images.
Yeah, and I haven't been able to stop since, so I may have a problem.
I don't know. As problems go, that's probably not the worst one you could have. At least that can potentially be useful to other people. Maybe.
Like my drinking.
Yes. That was very useful last Wednesday. Everybody enjoyed that.
Good.
Yes. So,
I got to say labia blaster.
Yes, you did. That was amazing. I'm kind of disappointed that we didn't get to make Brian cry.
Next time on, I'll have to use the word glands a lot.
Yeah. Either that or, you know, position the camera different and don't tell Ben that you're doing video again. And just, you know, hope for a miracle.
Well, see, Ben shouldn't be there, though. That he came home at all was kind of unusual. That's because he threw up on a car.
He threw up on a car?
Yeah.
Is he okay? Is he, like, sick now?
He was sick, basically.
Same thing you've got now?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Except I didn't get the nausea. I just got the weird headache.
And if you do get the nausea, you probably won't throw up on a car.
Probably not, since I don't really work around cars. I could throw up on a body, though.
Yeah, or, like, a coffin, or... That would be kind of awkward, especially if somebody was in it.
I threw up at work one time, but I threw up in a garbage can.
Would you lose your job if that happened?
No, not from that.
No, not the garbage can. Like, if you were in the middle of a funeral and you threw up on the coffin with someone in it?
Possibly.
I mean, that seems like one of the worst things that, you know, you could probably do in your line of work.
I think maybe after it happened, if I fainted and fell and hit myself in the coffin and got hurt, I might get excused.
Ah. So
if I was fine, though, I think I'd probably be in more trouble.
So basically, if you do that, you'd have to have presence of mind enough to just, like, collapse on the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you'd probably want to anyway, if you were that nauseous.
Although, if you're that nauseous anyway, you kind of already know you're going to throw up. You would leave ahead of time. I imagine most people aren't really surprised by vomit.
I guess not. I mean, I don't vomit a lot in general. But yeah, it seems like every time I have, I've had at least enough warning to be able to get to somewhere to deal with it.
Or start to move away from where you're at.
Well,
perhaps Ken has had a different experience.
I had one different experience, and unfortunately it was at work.
See, that's bad in a grocery store.
So you're just sitting there arranging fruit, and all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to throw up right now!
No, it was more like I had just come in from lunch. I wasn't actually on the clock yet. I was walking through line. My stomach felt a little iffy, so I got some Pepto. I was going to pay for it. Suddenly it came up, and it's all over the floor. Like, oh.
Well, all considered, that still could have been worse.
Could have been much worse. Could have been on the register.
What did you have for lunch that day?
5-year-old pizza?
No, I had wings. This happened about 10 minutes after I finished eating, so they were still quite not digested.
So your body just up and rejected them?
Yes.
I've had that happen
once. Yeah, at Long John Silver's. They had fried lobster bites. I'm like, okay, I'll try that. And,
My
body said, no, you're not digesting this.
Do you remember?
Get this shit out
of me. Do you remember?
My body did not. My body did not. And actually, the second time I had, and I'm pretty, you know, that was obviously, chicken was probably not cooked right. The second time I had food poisoning like that, it was 17 hours later, I threw up. Shit was still whole.
Oh, dude. Man.
My body did not like that at all.
But speaking of questionable seafood decisions, do you remember when Taco Bell was trying to sell shrimp tacos?
Yes.
No.
Now, I'm not a seafood eater, and even if I was, I wouldn't have got one of those. But, you know, Mickey's fried lobster bites thing made me think of that. Because it's just like...
But you'll eat raw fish by the truckload.
Even on paper, well,
yeah,
because like
that's not that's not, you know, bugs.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Sea bugs are the most delicious.
I liked popcorn shrimp before I saw what a live shrimp looked like, or what a not popcorn shrimp looked like cooked. After that, that was just kind of off the table.
Oh, you pussy. Shrimp are delicious.
Well, everything tastes good when it's deep fried.
Although, speaking of food poisoning and Taco Bell, there was that one time that they gave me salmonella, and
Did they charge you extra?
No, it was free, but I did throw up basically nonstop for about 24 hours, and probably should have gone to the hospital, but I didn't really actually understand that I was that sick.
Well, it's not like you died, I don't think.
I kind of wish I had while it was going on.
Of course, while it was going on, but afterwards.
As well as you throw up, and like, you know, normally you throw up, you feel better afterwards, you feel relieved. This one felt like I'd been punched in the f***ing stomach every time I threw up.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful.
Yeah, that's not really any fun. It's not fun either when you have the same thing coming out the other end. You know, just like nonstop diarrhea for 24 hours.
Oh, I thought you meant like vomit coming out of your butt.
It might as well be at that point.
God, that would burn, too.
It does! I've experienced this, man.
I just won't.
Well, the absolute worst actually is when you have diarrhea come out your mouth.
Well, that would be okay. The worst of all.
That one I can't claim.
I cannot claim it, but I have seen it.
Oh, God.
So, a living person?
No.
Oh.
Which means they died with that happening.
Oh.
It probably happened as they were...
choking on their own diarrhea coming up from the inside.
You know, it's a good thing I have what I do, so this stuff doesn't bother me any.
Yeah, I mean, getting desensitized to that because of your own conditions.
Yeah.
That is one unanticipated benefit.
Especially when I
still hear it, does the mic stop working?
Or did he have to go?
I kind of tuned out a while ago.
I'm not surprised.
I don't blame him.
But you know, good on you. Good on you for asking, Mickey.
But yeah, especially when you get to like, when you hit a point out of that when it comes up in real life and you just kind of breeze right through and everybody else is looking around like, oh wait, I'm sorry, right?
When you get so used to it, it doesn't even faze you anymore. Yeah.
So, have you ever had like a dry powder poop, like I was talking about with a Buck Cop today?
What?
No.
Like it comes out like cocoa powder, just completely dry and granulated.
No.
Oh, okay.
Is that possible?
It's Bob Cobb. That's all you need to know.
I hope so. I mean, maybe I was inventing a new kind of poop. I don't know, but it'd be kind of awesome if that had happened once.
How is that even possible?
I don't know.
I don't think it is. Like physically.
So this was Bach Cobb experiencing this?
No, I was suggesting to Bach Cobb as an alternative type of terrible poop.
Uh-huh.
I don't even recall what he was having trouble digesting at the time, but...
Could have been anything.
I just like the idea of, like, shitting out a pile of cocoa powder.
And then your toilet would just, you know, turn like chocolate milk.
Well, I've had that outcome before, but I don't think it was a result of, you know, powder shit.
But you get powder burns around the outside edge of the bowl.
I don't think that's how that actually works.
As long as we're on this topic, we should mention that the JD fundraiser is still going on.
I was hoping you would at this point, because there is nothing more JD than this.
There would never be a better time now.
Yeah, there is no more JD conversation than what we're having right now.
Yeah, that kind of crossed my mind, too.
Please, carry on, Mickey.
Well, since, you know, JD's not here to enjoy the poop talk with us, we'll have to poop talk without him, but we can still give money in his honor of poop. So there's a website, Earl, or something.
TFRadio.net / JD.
Anyone? Anyone know the Earl?
TFRadio.net /JD.
Say again without everybody speaking.
He can fix that in post.
TFRadio.net / JD, you f***ing assholes. Not all of that is the URL, but no, I'll let you figure it out.
That would be kind of appropriate, all things.
You know, JD would have enjoyed the train, Dick.
Oh, he absolutely would have.
So much. That was my first thought, honestly.
Well, who doesn't enjoy a giant train dong?
Well, XV, apparently.
We need to bring JD intro quotes back.
XV came from a completely failed train station. There were rape trains.
The thing is, I like trains.
You just don't like...
The train dick is hilarious. I just don't like the show.
Well, you know, everybody gets one, like you said.
You know, the theme is great. The costumes could be better except for the villains. I just don't like the show.
Any problem I had with the costumes themselves was redeemed with the glasses.
I'll grant you that was amusing.
I didn't like Tokyo at first at all. I still kind of don't, but
looks better as a suit.
Sold me. It's kind of sold me in the last two episodes, especially three. come on.
Train dick.
Yeah, I kind of want one now, actually.
A train dick?
Yeah.
They're not even that hard to find right now.
Well, it's just a matter of wanting one for $80.
Whatever happened with that little action figure one that didn't look terrible that one time we saw it?
I don't think it's out yet.
Because, I mean, that would probably be the thing to get, because who cares about the combining?
But I don't think that one would have a train dick.
Maybe we could, like, trick Fort Max into buying another box of candy toys and set off him.
And SRZ could not pay him for his portion for another 3 years. That's what that was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't even there, and I know that reference. What the f***, Fort Max? This is all your fault. But yeah, the JD...
I still say Esther's smarter than any of us.
Why? Oh, yeah, because he flaked out of doing one of the early guest host episodes.
Yeah.
I think he was actually the first one, too.
He stood us up.
He did. And because of that, it was like another year before we did Toku Spider-Man.
Which we probably can't do anymore because Marvel pulled the damn thing.
I'm sure somebody's got a copy of them somewhere.
I'm sure Fort Max has a copy of them.
I don't.
Wow.
What?
That's surprising.
Kind of is.
Somebody steal it out of your closet?
Nice. So yeah, the JD Memorial Fund, tfradio.net/JD, it's going to be running through May. We're almost to half of the $10,000 goal, so you know, keep giving. We appreciate even the smallest donations. You know, every little bit helps.
I like how in classic superhero time fashion we got on a huge tangent in the middle of plugging the fundraiser.
We wouldn't be us if we didn't.
I know. Here's something we deeply care about. Let's go talk about Spider-Man for a little bit.
You're listening to Superhero Time.
Ragu introduces Chicken Tonight Simmer Sauces, and suddenly everybody's saying,
I feel like chicken tonight, Chicken Tonight!
Choose from six new sauces. Each one's made with real vegetables and herbs, so you can make dishes like country French chicken and chicken cacciatore. Just brown the chicken, simmer, and serve.
I feel like chicken tonight.
New Chicken Tonight Simmer Sauces from Ragu.
Chicken Tonight!
Alright, time for Gaim.
Gaim time.
So we got 19 and 20 to do this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Paladin, 19.
Damn.
Haha.
Alright, so 19 starts off at the end of that stupid dance fest thing that we're supposed to give a shit about.
Not really.
But hey, in comes Duke.
And damn, Kota's got some f***ing moves.
Even untransformed.
That was kind of
so
hard to...
So I guess
to...
the dancing thing does help him a little bit that way.
That was kind of hard to buy, honestly.
It was, but it still looked cool as hell, so I don't care. To be honest with you.
Do we know who the action director was for this episode?
Did Sakamoto sneak in here?
Not enough wire work for that.
Good point.
No panty shots.
And not enough Marika either.
Yeah.
Well, panty shots thing, Sakamoto does plenty of that stuff. He usually, especially if there's someone there to tell him that, no, you can't do that.
One thing I do like about this fight, though, in spite of how ridiculous it was, is Kota just going straight to Jimbo Lemon.
Because, yes, he can do that.
So that makes sense. They do things that make sense in this show. Oh, my God.
And though he gets in a few good hits, he still gets his ass handed to him by Duke.
Yeah, and like Duke he's so casual about it, too. He's like, really?
And Kaito immediately runs up to try and fight Duke and has the exact same result.
He has a Kaito result, is what he has.
Yes.
He's Batman, you know.
He thinks he is.
No, he's Terry McGinnis, then.
Without the power suit, yeah.
That's an insult to Terry McGinnis. I mean, I like Kaito, don't get me wrong.
No, but honestly, if Terry put on the old Batman suit and went out and tried to be Batman...
Oh, he'd be f***ing...
He did that in one episode.
He would die.
Yep.
I mean, he almost died the first time he took the suit out when Bruce turned it off.
Yeah. Well, that being frozen, that kind of, affects things.
Well, Bruce trained for like 10 years to be the best. Terry started out the first day he got the suit.
Yeah. A little bit of a discrepancy there.
Old Bruce was so great.
Yes.
Yes.
The best moment was
like
how
to discuss
he knew,
more
yeah,
Batman
my
Beyond.
My favorite old Bruce part is that he knew he wasn't crazy because he doesn't call himself Bruce.
Yeah. Yes.
That was the best line.
And so Terry, power chamber location relevance aside,
Kaito decides this is totally the only way
to come back from this is to infiltrate Yggdrasil's lab again to find out exactly what the f*** they're up to.
I wonder if Kaito's actor is, getting used to picking himself up off the ground.
They probably put him through a couple weeks of special stunt training just for that.
Just for the falls and the picking up.
Yeah.
Hey, but surprise, surprise, guess who Duke is?
Oh, gee, I wonder.
It's Professor Waring.
Yes.
This explains why Kota could fight so well against him, because scientists aren't really trained fighters.
He didn't fight that well against him. What fight were you watching?
He survived, didn't he?
Well, he didn't wind up face down in a river.
I guess that's more than he would do with to Minato or Cid, so yeah.
So the professor says they now have two unknown quantities using drivers. First is Kota, and the second is Yoko, which she does not take very well, to be honest.
Actually, she doesn't really miss a beat either. She's just kind of, oh, really? Is that so?
It's kind of hard to get a read on her anyway, considering,
Which I think she's insane.
She always has crazy face.
Yeah.
But that's a very interesting thing, because, up to this point, we were kind of wondering, it's like, okay, it's a female writer. Yeah, how significant is that going to be? Is she going to be dead within five episodes?
I'd be surprised at this point.
But she's in the superhero time bumper. And now Ryoma's indicating that she might be more important or
the most powerful.
That she's just the only one that he doesn't know what she's after.
Which is probably the most dangerous thing in this show.
Because we know, because from what we can tell from Ward, he knows exactly what the other energy, right? What the all the other riders except for Yoko and Gaim are after.
Then of course there's Sagara, who the f*** knows. But we'll get to that later.
Well, also doesn't have a driver, so
not yet.
We know of.
I mean, he could get one. He could get one anytime he wants one. Honestly,
yeah.
He's just above that. He's not going to do the work himself.
Yet.
Right, but I'm saying that the line that Warren's line was specifically ones who had drivers.
Yeah.
I like how we're just calling him that now. Move on.
And speaking of Sagara, he's celebrating the Beat Rider dance show for some reason and claiming that the riders have given up the invest game.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of what his job is.
Yeah.
Except he Only
but yeah, they're still trying to convince us this dancing shit actually matters.
It matters to him, obviously. That's the question. Why does he care anymore?
Well, that's yet another question.
Uh-huh.
So after Maya and the other thing about
because the show must go on.
Because we need something for all that supporting cast to do.
So after Maya and all the other people who don't matter celebrate that news report, Kota leaves to visit what he tells them is about a job, but is actually meeting with Kaito again for an attack on Yggdrasil.
That's not when you put it like that, it's not entirely inaccurate. It's just that it's not what they think he means.
But Michi actually sees through that bullshit because, hey, expert at it, and follows.
Oh, that's so accurate, too.
Yeah.
And he decides that they should try to infiltrate Yggdrasil through that stable crack in Helheim.
Yes, the crack from behind.
We'll enter from the rear.
It's such a shame that they took out Baron the Butt Fiend. I mean, honestly, even before Train Dick, you know, they should have just ran with that.
After Train Dick, I think this is intentional, to be honest. I mean, he's a banana, come on!
The banana wants to enter the crack from behind.
Hmm, I wonder if this is, like, just... we're reading this wrong.
I don't think so.
And he's partnered with Nuts.
Oh, God. Yes.
So when he gets the Jinba arm, he should use the peach energy. Get, you know, butt and banana.
God, if Kaito is the one that beats Marika at some point, I'm going to just walk over somewhere and just quietly hide myself in a corner for a couple hours and cry.
Look, that would require Kaito actually winning.
Yeah, it would.
If anything, he's going to get his ass kicked again.
He is supposed to get an upgrade in the future, though.
Yeah, he has to get an upgrade. He's the secondary.
Actually, the secondary rider in this show is four people, because they're the ones with the new drivers. So I don't know about Kaito.
But they're all antagonist riders.
Yeah, but still, point is.
No, we have to accept that with Gaim, all the old rules are kind of out anyway. So
yeah, kind of. It's like you're kind of fit this round peg into a square hole, and it's not quite going in.
Sounds like you're
You're trying to fit the round banana into a square hole.
The round banana into a square crack, you mean?
From behind.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, how does that go for them?
Well, as soon as they reach the crack, they are confronted by metal tulips.
Whoops.
And then we are cut off by a commercial for Batride War 2.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Mickey, buy that.
I will.
Oh, good.
But then they fight the metal tulips.
Yes, this is our first appearance of the Tulip Hoppers.
Yeah, it is.
That is a thing that exists.
It is a thing that exists and kicks their f***ing asses. And can also open up cracks all on their own.
Yeah, that's,
I like the how they're like a vehicle that Cobra would make.
They are like Cobra would make.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so those things apparently are designed to be rider kick machines for the Kurokages.
Uh-huh.
And open cracks to kick people out of the forest.
Really, having a device to open cracks is kind of a frightening prospect, if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, we've already had a bunch of them.
Hmm?
Well,
the rider. Well, it's different. They don't just point and shoot, and there it is.
Yeah, they have to actually create.
It seems like it would cause more problems in the long run, to be honest.
Instantaneous.
So after they get kicked out of Helheim, they are confronted once again by DJ Sagara. And Kaito doesn't think they can trust him, but Kota reminds him, hey, he's the one who gave me this lemon seed.
That doesn't mean you can trust him, though.
I'm considering who they got the rest of their stuff from.
Well, considering his choices...
Yeah. I'm just saying, don't trust any of them.
Including the guy standing next to you, Kota.
Yeah, well...
Get to that.
Al-Kaito's fine. So this time, DJ Sagara gives Kota a tulip hopper lock seed.
Sure.
Why not?
Because this way they can get back into Helheim and get around that attack force to try to get through the crack into Yggdrasil.
Sure, because they could...
Advise their bikes to do that.
They did, I think, is the implication, but...
They used the bikes to get into the forest in the first place. They didn't take the bikes into the fight, though.
Yeah, and they need something to compete with the tulip hoppers.
Because, I mean, the bikes only really seem to be good for getting in and out of the forest. They're not really combat motorcycles.
Yeah. And, again, against those things, they probably would still get their ass.
Especially in a forest that's full of trees.
So that means the dandelion's supposed to be the combat motorcycle?
Yep.
It's the speeder bike, I mean...
And it shoots lasers.
So, before they try an attack with round two, Kotek gives Kaito the watermelon lock seed.
Also, it is notable, Sakura just kind of vanishes. He's Batman.
I'm still not convinced he's real.
Neither am I. But
that's
yes,
the frightening part.
The watermelon lock seed, because Kaito needs to compensate. And Kota recognizes this.
Hey, buddy, your track record's not so good.
And well, by with this so thing, you can't possibly lose.
And by not so good, I mean you lost to Greedon and Kurokage. And that was 15 episodes ago.
Yes.
That's when you were still powerful.
Heck, if there was a writer that used the sunflower lock seed, he probably would have lost to them too.
He probably would have. Like, I love Kaito as a character. It's just fun to make fun of him.
He just does not win.
Ever.
No, he's very Kagami from Kabuto.
He's like the loser villain of Gundam.
Which
he's
one?
Kind of like Jared.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know? Like, he's always boasting.
You know, he got
running first into the fight. Always getting his ass kicked.
He got randomly punched in the face by some kid one day, and then his life just completely got shot to hell after that. Until he died.
Yeah, which is so far an accurate representation of Kaito. So how many Kurokages do you think Kota kills here?
Probably a few after Kaito ties them up with the dandeliners, which he apparently has two of for some reason.
And can remote control. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it does not surprise me he has two of them. We actually saw him picking one of them.
Him picking one of them.
Yeah, but you think
considering how many buds he had last time, how many Loxies did he have to pick to get two?
You think he stopped there?
It's not like he has anything else to do now that he's quit his dance team.
As we have established, Kaito is nothing if not persistent.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, Kaito decides to try and take on Sigurd.
Ah, this is a good idea.
And tells him he's not trying to expose their secrets, he just wants to know if Yggdrasil is truly strong.
So
he is the sign of the weak.
So he's Wu Fei now.
Well, guess who else also always lost?
Yep. So he is the loser.
Anyway.
He is the loser villain from Gundam.
No, wait. The thing is, Wu Fei didn't even win. Trey's let him kill him.
Yeah.
And it gets called. And Trey's gets called on it too. He's like, eh, well. It's like, you son of a fucking bitch. No wonder he joined the villains in the OVA.
Trace was the greatest character.
Yes.
Him and old Bruce, man.
I did not appreciate Trace as much when I was younger as I do now.
I know. It takes a few rewatchings to really get it.
Yeah. But he was the best character in that show, I think.
He was the only one who knew exactly what was going on all the time.
Yes. And manipulated every single f***ing person under the sun.
Yes.
So, Kaito whips out his watermelon Nataku.
Yep. Accurate. The only way he could win against an energy rider.
Apparently, the watermelon arms is strong enough to go toe-to-toe with the energy riders.
For as long as it's powered.
It's a new sword with it, too.
I think it's had that sword.
I think
that's a completely different weapon.
Is it? Oh yeah, it is, huh?
It's nothing like the one Kota had when he used watermelon.
It must be because it's Kaito using it, and the effect.
That's the only way they have to distinguish it, I guess.
Yeah, and the effect of his driver versus Kota's. And actually, that does make sense because he has the knight theme, while Kota has the whole, you know, dual sword samurai theme. That makes
right.
sense.
But hey, they still have the CGI budget for watermelon arms for a little while.
They had a lot of CGI for this episode.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Kota is walking down the river and runs into Shin Zangetsu again. Conveniently at the place where they more or less fought before.
Well, at a place like that.
He
got so traumatized he tried to give up the whole rider thing.
But he's completely different now. He's got a lot more toys now.
Takatora has a certain effect on people, but again, we'll get to that.
So, Gaim goes Jinba Lemon and decides to fight round two against Shin Zangetsu.
Meaning he didn't learn anything from...
he got his ass handed to him by regular Zangetsu.
And he didn't learn anything from fighting Duke a little while ago.
No, but again, I do like he does go straight to Jinba Lemon without missing a beat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small touch, but it's a nice one, because sometimes it's like, dude, why did you go to Cyclone Joker? Because we need to have it in every episode. Yes, but... Although they still managed to sneak Orange Arms into here, but regardless.
And Kaito manages to get through the crack, but he is immediately intercepted by Sigurd again.
Yeah, so much for that victory thing.
Victory? Kaito doesn't know the meaning of the word.
Clearly!
And of course, Gaim loses yet again to Shin Zangetsu after falling back into regular Orange Arms, conveniently.
I like that Takatora not only just does not even miss a beat, he just untransforms himself, because it notes in the next episode recap, he canceled his transformation. Kota didn't even knock him out of it.
Yeah. Right.
And apparently he doesn't give a fuck about secret identities or anything.
Clearly.
Not like Kota would recognize him, though.
Well, no, he knows Michi. He doesn't know Takatora. I don't think he even knows about Michi's family.
He doesn't.
Anything related to Yggdrasil, so...
Yeah, because
Michi's definitely struggled hard enough to keep those two lives separate from each other.
Yep.
But now they're starting to overlap.
Yeah,
well...
the worst possible way.
But...
and that brings it nicely into episode 20.
Okay.
That's enough of you talking.
Let's see this evil without purpose. Let's see this evil devoid of reason. Shall we?
Alright, everyone place your bets on what you think it's going to be.
A little late.
Well, before the episode aired.
It's actually different than what I thought it was going to be, but...
yeah.
Close enough. It's different enough that I'm not disappointed necessarily, but we'll go.
I was expecting a giant mirror.
You are the monsters.
Humanity was the evil all along.
They sort of are, but...
Turns out it's man.
Shocking.
It should have been Furbus.
It was the Ghost Sagers.
I believe that.
We're helping these guys garden out. You guys want to help too?
Kota and Takatora are walking through the forest, and Kota's like, all, seriously, dude, what the f***?
It is so weird at this point, 20 episodes in, to just kind of see them walking along and not trying to murder each other.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, you can't really get any progression at this point without the Invest coming along and them having to transform and, you know, cut to the theme song.
And even weirder is to see a double transformation between Zangetsu and Gaim.
Yeah, who could have seen that coming?
Not this soon. It's like, that's kind of cool. And it's like you almost get desensitized to that at some point. But when it's characters that have been, you know, trying to murder each other.
This is the sort of thing that wouldn't happen until, like, the last three episodes under anyone else.
Or something like that. The last arc, at least.
It's also interesting that the whole Zangetsu Gaim fighting, there's never been any reason for it. It's just that... since they first saw each other, they've fought every single time. They've never talked.
Yeah, usually because, you know, Koja's in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's in Takatora's way.
Yeah, basically.
And he's a stupid kid, so are they, so he thinks.
So, back at Yggdrasil in the tree room, Ryoma is trying to get Kaito to, you know, join up again. Because he needs more guinea pigs.
Yeah.
But Kaito is just being Kaito as he sits there on the floor bleeding.
He's quite good at it.
He's had a lot of practice.
If I'm strong, I'll stop bleeding and not die.
Actually, he probably does think that.
He probably does. Like, I can will myself to stop bleeding.
Well, some people do believe that. But, yeah, back in the forest, Takatora and Kota do double finishers to make things even weirder. And
like, this ain't gonna get weird, is it?
Too late for that.
And then Takatora says something interesting. We don't know if this is a different planet or just another dimension of some kind. Because that's not something that I really considered before.
No, it's not. And it's like he just drops it so casually. He's like, eh, you know, it could be another dimension, could be another f***ing planet.
I
love how your response is that. We're still working on that. We'll get back to you.
Yeah, I mean,
it's such a business response too.
It is, but that's what it is. But that's what makes it really interesting, because I mean, there is a whole scientific research division devoted to figuring out what the hell.
And that's Yggdrasil's entire point, as Ryoma explains to Kaito.
Their only job is to investigate the Forest of Helheim.
They just kind of had to become a corporation in order to not have people pay too much attention.
And fund it, probably.
They had to become Walmart so nobody would notice them.
What did that say about Walmart?
They also mentioned that the cracks were showing up for a while, and now they've increased in frequency.
Mm-hmm. All focused around Japan because, you know, everything focuses on Japan.
Yes, it's Kamen Rider. Of course it does.
And focused around specifically this giant freaky tree in the middle of the town.
Which they decided to cut open.
Which, we were right, was the shrine that was originally growing before Yggdrasil took over the city.
Because, yep. Man, Kaito is pissed when he notices that.
He can see, like, if I had this strength to punch you. Strength.
Yeah.
If he had to... No. The truly strong would be able to take that tree back to where it was before.
Oh, I like, though, when Kaito grabs Ryoma by his coat. Like, Ryoma doesn't miss a beat. He just, you know, smooths his hair back, and Sid just sits there casually raising an eyebrow like, eh. Like, this guy looks like he's about to, you know, go f***ing postal on both of them, and they're just like, whatever, man.
Yeah, but he also looks like he's about to fall over.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, what he's capable of or not.
And what he's capable
in this case, the objective word is not.
To him repeatedly.
Yeah. Because both of them have kicked his ass. He
and easily could again. Because Kaito is still bleeding.
And limping.
Yeah, and I think he only has the use of... I think he may only have the use of one arm at this point. So, it's not going great for Kaito right now, you know.
It's never going great for Kaito right any time.
But this is an especially low point.
Well, yes.
Yeah, especially when he just kind of stands there and stews because he knows that he can't really do anything right now.
Yeah, he's in the, you know, the lion's den, so to speak, and all he can do is just weakly hobble behind Ryoma.
Yeah. And then Sid says the thing that everybody's thinking. Nobody really understands what Ryoma's thinking.
Yes! I just love that about this show. It's like, you'll be thinking something, and then... somebody just dropped the exact same comment. It's like, yep, that's right.
Going by the way Minato is looking when he says that, she probably thinks the same thing.
You mean the way Minato's always looking?
No, but she's a little bit downcast when he says that because she realizes she can't even get in his head either.
That's true. Like, I legitimately don't know if Ryoma is an antagonist, if he's a protagonist, maybe, eventually? Or if he's just...
I'm saying antagonist.
I don't know.
I'm saying he seems crazy enough to want to end the world.
Possibly.
But he's no Dr. Maki.
There's also Sid. Who is definitely an antagonist.
Yes. Well, Sid's an asshole, I mean...
Yeah, there's enough wondering about Ryoma to not really know what he's...
He's probably in favor of whatever's going to let him make the most drivers.
Probably.
I could see that, yeah.
And back in the forest...
Okay, yeah. And electronics back to the Gundam reference.
So finally they reach the hole.
The hole.
So when they showed Michi reacting before, what did you really think this was going to end up being?
What I thought this was going to be is we're not going to see this again for 25 episodes.
Besides that, though, I mean,
you said
when
it was only five, right?
When we got back to that at the end of the series, what were you expecting to see there?
I was expecting Watchmen-level space vagina. Something with a bunch of tentacles and eyes and a quivering vagina mouth.
I was expecting something not... I don't really know what I was expecting.
Purple Space Hulk?
Maybe future Zawame City, as it was speculated, but at the same time, what we see here is not an immediate impact. It's more what you realize, like the fridge logic of it as it goes through the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which of course Mitchie immediately realized because he's Mitchie and he's a fucking genius.
But even Kota seems to get the implication of it right away.
Yeah, eventually.
It gets worse and worse as things go on.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchie understood the full gravity of the situation right away, but, I mean, even Kota can see just from the basis, oh, this is probably not a good thing to find.
No, it's not.
So they find a ruined, overgrown city out in the middle of the forest. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I have to admit, you know, from how overreacted Mitchie was a few episodes ago, this actually kind of lives up to it.
Once you get past
the fact that it looks like a pre-rendered background from PlayStation 1 JRPG.
That's not important for it, Max.
Little polygon cloud walking across it.
Yeah, I was thinking FF7 too, but I was trying to refrain. Thank you for it, Max.
It kind of reminds me of the Zedum fight from Garo Shining Darkness.
Yeah. But that is what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
Seen one ruined, overgrown city. You've seen them all.
Yeah, but once you realize all of the implications, Mitchie's reaction does make sense.
Yeah, no, I mean that's what really surprised me about this. The reaction was so overblown. We didn't think it could ever live up to that, and it kind of does.
I think what helps it is that if you had waited my originally presumed, oh, we're not going to see this for 20 episodes or so.
Yeah.
Then it would have been. Oh, really?
Yeah.
At this point, still coming fresh off of that, and with all the other plot developments, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This makes sense.
Okay, so, what we got here is, oh, there's a city here. Mm. Which means, okay, there's alien life.
Yes.
It's overgrown, which means all this alien life is already dead, and now this alien life is invading Earth.
Because the alien life... are actually innocent people that were turned into Invis.
Or animals, or what have you.
This episode really implies that the majority of them are probably people.
Yeah, which I probably suggest that...
Well, that there are things that used to be living creatures there, but it's...
Well, people enough that they have a living room.
At least some of them were sentient and formed furniture.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Even if it looks to have been made out of stone, which could not have been... You know what this is? This is the Flintstones.
Oh, no. It's not in the future. It's in the past. Wait, how does that work?
And Professor Waring refers to the creatures as an invasive species.
I really like that comparison, though.
Yes.
Suddenly the name Invest makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And it makes the whole fruit and flower theme work even better than it already was.
Yeah, because they kind of beat you over the head with it.
They do, but it makes it all seem kind of flow together a lot better than it already was.
It's a very obscure type of alien invasion story to pull of an invasive species that's just sort of. Not really actively, intelligently trying to invade. It's just
the natural process of it.
What it does.
Well, it's like Takator describes it as evil without reason.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean the way that this is described also as being an alien plant life. I mean, even not taking that literally as being from like outer space, it would imply that there was probably another world that it came through cracks and invaded the forest world and is just progressing on forward.
Yeah.
Damn. I mean, they're setting up the idea that there's a whole lot of other worlds that this is already
passed.
There
could be entire planets full of Invis.
Well, I mean, Helheim is either a dimension or it's another planet that's been completely overrun.
Right.
So.
Highly possible.
Yeah. I doubt we'll ever actually get further development on that, but the implication is really interesting to me.
Yes.
And that's what this episode is great about, is him all these implications of how big and what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a lot of stuff that you would not be expecting them to deliver on this soon. You would expect this in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks like they're trying to... The structure of the show is being pushed forward at a really great rate, and they're trying to realign everyone.
Yeah, and the fact is, it's not just a explanation about that, okay, here's everything that's going on. It's, here's what we know is going on.
Right.
And then there's all this other stuff that we don't. We have no clue. That's what we're trying to figure out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to before. They've done a lot of research on this. They know a lot of things about it from spending years working on it, and there's still... trying to work out how to stop it and more details about it.
Because apparently Earth only has maybe 10 years if they're lucky.
Yeah, that's kind of bad. And, you know, at this point you start to realize, too, why they had the firestormers going around sealing up the cracks and killing all the plants they could find.
Yep.
Also, what's great...
This also means that Takatora is not actually an egotistical bastard. He was right all along when he said the fate of the world depended on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, if we rewind back to episode one, how sure were we all that Yggdrasil was the big evil corporation that was the big bad?
I mean, they still might be, but...
Yeah, but at this point, though, they're Takatora actually coming across as heroes.
Yeah, Takatora is entirely justified, really.
Yeah.
In everything he's done.
Yeah, at least within his own...
twist coming.
Within his own context, he's completely justified. He's using awful means at some points to do it.
Oh, yes,
but...
he is, but, you know, with the... plant's going to die, then you do what you can.
But the whole general point of the Yggdrasil Corporation is not to destroy the Earth, but to save it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ideally, yes.
Ideally.
Yes.
Which sort of makes them like Zekt again, too.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Knuckle is in the middle of the city fighting some...
Since all the important writers are in Helheim, Knuckle has to defend the people from Invest this week.
Yeah, he's taking on a couple of rookie-level Invests, and that's only going marginally okay.
He actually has to get his ass saved by Peko.
With a slingshot.
And an ass slap.
Well, yeah, distraction.
I saw somebody with the best idea. Make Peko a peanut rider and give him a slingshot weapon.
So in the attack, somebody got infected by the plants, and...
Well, not before Bravo showed up.
No, I'm looking at somebody's infected.
Bravo showed up, to be honest.
Yeah. Because Zach and Pico are trying to help,
Yes, after Bravo showed up. I'm sorry, my bad.
Then Bravo comes to turn everybody against them again.
Of course.
Because can't have them looking like they're helpful.
Yeah.
And Ornak's still there, too.
And Bravo's got some sweet Michael Jackson Thriller moves going on.
Yes,
And Jonouchi. Some amazing purple pants, by the way.
Yeah. Jonouchi is still there, but he's just there.
He's just being Skull.
I think he borrowed one of Bravo's scarves, too.
Yeah.
It's cold, man.
Sure, we'll go
and
with
then
that.
More Invest show up.
Right, so when Bravo was in the middle of talking, damn it.
And that's the only reason he's mad that the Invest have shown up.
Uh-huh. Bravo really is great. But yeah, this is the first time in a while I've gotten to see Bravo's armor transform in, like, close focus, and yeah, that can't work on a toy.
That was like some Beast Wars level bullshit.
Yeah.
No, not quite. It didn't grow any limbs out of nothing.
Well, almost.
It's not Beast Machines level bullshit, though.
Well,
no. But speaking of our firestormers, now Mitchie's leading a team of them.
And speaking of Yggdrasil acting like heroes.
Speaking of all the useful writers being occupied.
Wait. What was that about useful writers?
Didn't we just see
Bravo?
Well, I'm just saying, Mitchie. He's useful, but not as a writer, typically.
Exactly. All the useful writers were occupied.
Yeah, all right, okay.
He was useful enough to defeat a rookie-level Invest so that the Kurokages could come and set fire to things.
Well, he had help and managed to actually shoot something for once.
Yeah.
If you consider other Kurokages to be help.
I don't.
Well,
maybe it's just...
They provide a buffer. They're like meat shields.
Yeah, okay. Like Zek Troopers.
Exactly.
Bullet sponges.
Yeah.
Anyway, then there's some thing back at Team Gaim headquarters, and Mai's there. My ears started bleeding. It's probably not important anyway.
Who cares?
They were counting a lot.
Yeah, it's something about Mitchie not really needing to keep hanging out with them or whatever.
Creepily staring at
Mai. The important part back in the forest, Koto wants to know why they don't tell people about all this, and Takatora tells him that people are stupid and would react violently if they say...
He's right.
He's right.
Yeah.
It's like that Men in Black rule. A person is smart, people are stupid.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
What I love about what's going on here is that Kota is like asking all these questions, you know, why are you doing it this way? Why are you doing it this way?
And it's the same questions the audience was asking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the Takatora explains why, and Kota's like, oh.
And I like how, like, through the entire conversation, this entire episode, Takatora does not miss a fucking beat.
Yeah,
I'm almost surprised to see him this honest, but at the same time, seeing how he is, it makes sense. He's like, dude, you're sticking your nose in stuff you don't even f-ing understand. Let me explain something for you.
Let me learn you something.
Yes, since you're going to be in the way, let me like broaden your horizons and let you see what's actually happening.
So that way, either maybe you can either get out of my way, or maybe you can learn to
help.
Do something useful.
Yeah, because...
And I love that Kota, like, realizes he's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. But...
It's not like this reaction, like, oh, you were evil, you're not... No, it's like, oh, no.
I'll never believe anything you say. It's like, oh, well, yeah, that does make sense.
And Takatora raises
this
another...
This is all very logical.
Takatora raises another good point, too, which is that if anybody else got Yggdrasil's technology to fight this...
They would use it for bad stuff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is true. You
and it's probably true of people in Yggdrasil also, but Takatora at least knows he has, you know, noble intention with it.
And Takatora is in charge of that shit, or mm-hmm. so he thinks.
Well, yeah, as in charge of the
Yggdrasil. Because we didn't get back to telling the same story to Kaito.
Yeah, because this episode does change my entire perspective on Takatora, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody else a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, it kind of does. But back to Kaito.
Yeah, so basically he gets invited to join the team again. And he basically spits in Ryoma's face and laughs at him. But Ryoma kind of likes that.
He got spunky, likes it.
Yeah.
You're welcome. I knew what I was saying.
Kaito's whole thing is basically that, you know what, if people aren't strong enough to save themselves, f*** them.
Is this before or after Minato and Cid come in?
That was
after. A little bit after.
Okay, I think.
Well, this is pretty much how Kaito's been the entire time, so yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but if it, but then we learn...
Minato and Cid also had their little conversation, and it's obvious that there's something else going on there.
It's layers upon layers.
This is when Kaito takes out the pickled fruit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Oh, for a second, I'm like, dude, you're not going to bite that, are you? Like, this show was so... all over the place that I almost thought for things like you're not okay good
that would have been awesome
the truly strong
it,
will not turn into Invis from it.
Oops, I'm an Invis. Sorry Kota, you gotta kill somebody else now.
Oh, that was another good thing at the start of the episode too, where Kota tries to ask Takatora about Yuya. I forgot about that.
He probably doesn't even know that guy's name.
Well, I don't know. Didn't Ryoma have a whole file with his name involved and everything?
How many?
Like Takatora listens to Ryoma's reports.
How many victims have there been besides Yuya?
Besides, Takatora was listening to the copy that Mitchie made.
Takatora is the one who didn't pay, who didn't care about who the people that they were giving the drivers out to.
This is true. It's like, just give it to somebody. We'll test them.
Yeah, it's fine. It'll all work itself out.
It was like, okay.
We'll just kill them all when we're done anyway.
And Sid's like, yeah, okay.
But yeah, Ryoma and Sid and Minato are all basically on board with Kaito's plan.
The best part is when they all start laughing.
There's also the one little bit that I like for no good reason where the shot is laid out where all three of them stand equally distant from Kaito in the center. They make a triangle around him. It's just a really cool-looking shot the way they did that. Yeah. I have no actual good reason for liking it besides that.
But it's like they all laugh at his overacting. It comes across. It's probably accurate. But they're like, yeah, you know, we could use you.
Meanwhile, back in the ruined stone city, some more invests come up, and we get the most misleading teaser bump ever. After the commercial, Zangetsu and Gaim team up.
Yes.
No, it's more like Zangetsu fights all of them himself, while Gaim stands there transformed and doesn't want to fight because he's afraid of killing what used to be people.
Well, Gaim stands there.
In other words, he has another psychotic episode.
It's Shin Zangetsu destroys all of them effortlessly, while Gaim doesn't die.
Yes. It's not really teaming up per se.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, oh, they're going to team. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Oh. Better luck next time.
Because, you know, Shin Zangetsu and Lemon-Coated Gaim really could have had a cool fight scene together, but...
They may eventually.
Maybe. You know, I mean, that still kind of counts on Kota deciding to, you know, get on the team and...
Well, at this point, at the end of this episode, because I have not seen 21.
Me either.
It's still not.
It's still not sub, so I haven't bothered. At this point, I'm not even bothering watching the Raws.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of can't get anything out of them meaningfully.
Occasionally I do, but at this point, I think
I mean, especially like with last week's, a lot of people were saying that, oh, it's just it's a Monster of the Week episode.
Yeah.
That doesn't really do that. And that's one of the best parts about it.
Like, yeah. if you take this episode at its ending and say Kaito is in with them, then Kota and Zack are the only ones that aren't.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we've got this where the writers are being divided up among the Yggdrasil teams. I don't necessarily think Kota's going to fall in with Takatora Yggdrasil automatically.
No.
I think, if anything, he's going to end up being Sagara's pet writer.
Oh. Well, I think the DJ Gun is kind of a...
Yeah. But, I mean, even without that foreknowledge, it kind of works that way because each team then has one original writer under them.
Akatora has Ryugen.
Yeah, and Ryoma has Baron, and then Sagara would have Gaim, so...
I'm moving up Takatora as my guest for the next writer to die.
I can kind of see it, but...
I still think the main four are going to last up until the 40s.
Yeah, I mean, it would be more likely that an energy writer would go. And probably Sid.
Or Minato. Although Minato now apparently has stuff to be revealed herself, so...
Yeah, I mean... It's so hard to get a read.
There's a lot of ways they could go with this.
See, here's the problem. Every time we speculate...
We're wrong?
Entirely.
But that's so good.
Isn't it, though? It's the complete opposite of Kamen Rider Wizard. It's like, okay, here's the preview for the next start of the next two-parter. Guess the next two episodes. Okay.
That's why we invented the Mad Libs.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And it was right all the way up to the end.
But
that's such a good idea.
It was. But so yeah, Gaim.
Yeah. Gaim.
Next episode, Coates is fighting Sigurd again.
Again.
I'm sure they'll make it interesting somehow.
Coates is fighting Sigurd and Kaito's talking to Minato. This is gonna end well.
Also worth mentioning before we wrap up, I was invited along with Will West to record a segment for the Action Figure Blues podcast about the Power Rangers toy line over the last 20 years. That's going to be going up on the episode that posts later this week. And basically, the whole thrust of it was what would make Power Rangers a contender for the best toy line ever. And it was challenging, but I came up with some good points. Because I don't actually think Power Rangers could ever be the best toy line ever. Because, you know, Power Rangers.
Because Bandai.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've played with these toys. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
We know.
Yeah. But no, it was a good time. It was fun to talk to Will again. We haven't really talked to him on Skype in about three and a half years.
We need to trick him into being on the show again.
Yeah, well, I mean, he does describe himself as a professional podcast guest now, so it might not be that difficult to, you know, get him to come on. Mickey would just probably have to promise him some sexual favors or something.
I do that to everybody, though.
True.
We did have to actually cover some American stuff, though.
Yes, that is a challenge. We could have had him on for that Power Rangers episode a couple weeks ago.
That would have been great, actually.
But, you know, nobody was thinking ahead. We had other things on our mind still.
Yeah.
So, you
know. We can cover Super Mega Force. Oh, no, please don't.
They left in another old team this week, by the way.
Which one?
Yeah, I saw
Turbo Ranger.
So in the I saw this from a clip. So it's the Gal Ranger episode, in the part on the Animarium where they are fighting the Zangiac forces. Of course, they changed into Turbo Ranger originally. Well, instead they just changed into Wild Force. But when the Red Lion knocks them off and they're falling, they use the Sentai footage where they're Turbo Ranger.
They're on screen for, like, all of a second.
But you can still see it.
So it's not really like Power Rangers' new powers again.
It's more like the, okay, they couldn't completely hide them, but they worked with... It would have been a shot that would have been tricky to recreate without the CGI element.
It would have been a shot difficult to recreate with effort.
Yeah.
So basically, this is typical Saban. It's close enough. Just go with it.
That seems to be their motto right now.
It's just like classic Power Rangers, then.
Yeah. And they'll justify saying, oh, well, that's the Power Rangers Turbo Powers.
Did they do anything for the part where they turn into Jetman right afterwards?
They took that out, apparently.
Or they just fell.
They landed in trash.
From Jetman to garbage.
There's a metaphor here somewhere.
They landed, when they landed, they were in the Ghost Ranger suits.
So, obviously, what looked like the Turbo Ranger suits was actually just a transitional stage of transformation between the Wild Force powers and their standard powers.
It looked like they had color edited, they had done some digital editing on the colors to make them look less like Turbo Ranger, and they looked more generic, but I'm...
So they still noticed it was there.
They touched it up so that it didn't look as blatant.
Even though it looked pretty blatant as it is.
For a second, I mean...
Yeah, still.
Yeah.
It's Power Rangers. You honestly can't ask for perfection here.
No, I guess.
When you ask for perfection, you get RPM.
Once.
And, you know, even that
no,
wasn't
no,
completely...
That's not what happened. What happened was we don't care
for Max,
go over, but as long as you don't go over budget.
For Max.
What we need to have is have the show constantly on the verge of cancellation.
Well, that is true.
Unfortunately, we've left those good days behind.
So, speaking of Turbo, are we going to try to do that Car Ranger episode again next week?
Yes, we will do that next week when we don't have, you know, four weeklies to cover. One of which I'm doing without notes, so it takes as long as it did. And,
except we probably will have four weeklies to cover next week.
Well, we haven't decided how we're handling that Garo yet, so just for now, you know, expect that it's going to be our normal 2+ power playback. We'll figure something out for Garo later on, like after it's all subbed.
Which might be this week, at this rate.
Yes, it may be, but, you know, we'll still figure something out after that point.
Yes.
By which I mean probably ignore it for 6 months.
Oh, let's not do what Overtime has done with the movie.
Movies.
Oh, yeah.
There's two of them. little bit, yeah. I'm sure we'll get them eventually.
Someday, over the rainbow.
With imagination?
That was a Wizard of Oz joke.
I know.
Coca in Wonderland. And...
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But Oz isn't Wonderland. Could you do something more along the lines of legs? Because honestly, that's probably what most of us are more interested in seeing anyway.
Well, yeah.
Koga's great and all, but, you know, he doesn't really have the legs.
God, that painkiller must be kicking in if I mix those two up. Okay, so. Oh, by the way, I've been medicated this whole time.
You've been listening to Superhero Time. Go to tokupodcast.com for show notes and to listen to previous episodes. Find us on iTunes or download our Android app at tfradio.net/android. Follow us on Twitter for show updates, weekly power playback, and more at superhero_time. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production.
Superhero Time. 次回もよろしく。
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.